My name is Gershon Gerchikov. I'm one of the violinists of the quartet.
My name is Jan Gruning. I'm the violist of the quartet.
I'm Sasha Kazovsky, one of the violinists.
Okay, great.
My wife Amit can't be with us because her and I have a newborn at home, so she's attending to her.
Ah, who's is that Jan just speaking?
That's Jan, yes. Sorry.
Well, let's start with you. Do you say Ariel Quartet or Ariel Quartet?
Ariel works, yes.
Yeah. Where's the name come from? And tell us about your origins, because you were very young when you formed as a quartet, right?
Indeed. We were, the three of us were founding members. We were students in a middle school and high school in Jerusalem in Israel, somewhat similar to what an art school would be here, except that it had a specific accent, and it was just for musicians and dancers. So we would have, and the school was at the same building as the conservatory, so we would have the regular school subjects in the morning, and then in the afternoon, the dancers would go dance, and we would go play. And so chamber music was one of the classes that we had, and we were put together at first somewhat, arbitrarily, I guess, somewhat depending, according to our age and level of playing. But then very quickly, we got hooked. I don't think there's a better way to put it. We really did get hooked because of the repertoire, the process of working together, of figuring out how to put things together, how to make these sounds together, and just the result and the pleasure that we got from both working on the repertoire as well as performing it on stage very quickly took on a sort of very serious trajectory. And here we are today, almost after two decades.
So that was some 20 years ago.
Almost, yeah.
Usually musicians, you hear stories of their artistic growth when they're young and how they grow and they have various mentors and what have you. Usually it's a solo journey, but you took this journey together as a quartet. Do you think it affected your ability to play together, your sound as a quartet, kind of going into musical maturity together?
I think definitely so. I think when we started playing together, it was really at that point that we were developing instrumentally and developing our skills and developing our artistic personalities. We were not in a way formed yet. So that was just a great way of influencing one another, exploring different aspects, different things. And I think this is something that stayed with us. And we, in a way, that's how we work today. We are very personal in our approach to rehearsal. We are always very happy to explore different things together. But I think it was maybe on one hand a little bit difficult when we were younger because we had to practice a lot and we had a lot of pressure from our teachers. But at the same time, I think it gave us maybe something, also certain skills about approaching music that maybe otherwise we would have gotten them later or in a different way.
I'm looking today from an educator's perspective, I don't see really a better way for a young musician to develop without chamber music. Because really, if you think about it, what music is a relationship between sounds. It's always how sounds interact and connect with one another. And when you're playing with other people, you don't have a choice but to deal with that aspect of music. And so everything, whether it be rhythmic connections, harmonic connections, melodic connections, everything is about relationships. And so I think we were, in that sense, indeed very lucky that our main bulk of development as musicians happened through this medium.
Mm. Where does the name come from, Ariel?
Yeah, the name actually, that's now I can chirp in because I'm the only one of the four members who is not actually a founding member. I joined almost 8 years ago. So what I understood so far is that the name is one of the disputedly 72 or something between 16 and
80 or 72
biblical names for the city of Jerusalem. And there is a Jerusalem quartet who, in fact, grew up a generation before us with the same teacher. And so you guys decided to call it the Ariel Quartet. And the Ariel literally means the Lion of God, and it's on the emblem for the city of Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So
okay.
You see it everywhere when you go through the city. So that's great. That's where the name comes from. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about your debut album on Avi Records.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You've chosen Johannes Brahms and Béla Bartók.
Yes.
At first glance, you would think of those composers and their string quartets as being on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Right.
But you're tying them together in this album. Can you talk a little bit about why Brahms, why Bartók, and how the two of them complement each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are two, I think, primary aspects to this decision-making regarding the repertoire. One had to do with the fact that this is our first commercial record, and it was very important for us to bring into the picture the experience and the longevity of the group. And so, for example, the Brahms we've been playing, I think, since we were about 16 years old, on and off. And so we had really a tremendous amount of time to grow with this piece, and we wanted that to be a part of what we bring to the listeners, just the richness and depth of a group that has so much experience with a given piece of music. And then I think it's interesting, yes, they are very different, both of these composers. At the same time, there's so much that binds them together. I think, first of all, just the Beethovenian tradition, and that's true in general for both of their music, but specifically with both of these works, as well as both their enormous interest in their Hungarian origins. And Brahms is not his origins, but he was incredibly interested in that
tradition
of music. Yeah, and mm-hmm. and again, in specific, it's true in general, but specifically in both of these pieces, those influences are so present and so alive. And so, yes, very different, but yet very, very a lot of links between both.
Yeah,
yeah.
You say you've been playing the Brahms for quite a while now, almost your entire time with the mm-hmm. quartet. What's your history with the Bartók quartet?
Well, the Bartók is kind of like me. It's a newer addition to the quartet, although I'm really not that new to it now. But the Bartók we've been working on for, I would say, 5-6 years. We've played, except for one of the quartets, we've played all of them on stage, all of the six. And I think that we have, perhaps with our draw to Beethoven cycles, which we started about a couple of years ago, we have kind of developed a taste for the cyclic idea. So we like to explore all of these composers' pieces. We have played all of the Brahms on stage. And so I think with that in mind, the Bartók being the early one, I think, is a very interesting work. In that it sort of we witnessed a composer almost finding his style and his expression. Mm-hmm. We in the first movement we experience a movement that was described by Bartók as a funeral dirge, a very lament and longing cry, perhaps similar to the beginning of Beethoven's Opus 131, but then right. we develop yeah. through the movements, and at the end of it we get that folky Bartókian sound that we still hear in the later quartets and in all of his other music. So I think with that in mind, both of these pieces share a very a common denominator in its introvert expressiveness in that longing and
yeah.
darkness that I think is expressed and part of both composers' character, actually. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
yeah.
Well, you can draw a lot of similarities between Bartók and Beethoven, especially that quartet Opus 131 opening with the kind of the slow fugue like movement, and Beethoven, it seems like he's trying to find his voice, and very much so in the Bartók
right
as well.
So both the Bartók and the Brahms also we played for our Carnegie Hall debut a couple of years back, and a few months just after that we recorded this disc. So for us, I think that sort of was kind of a combination that we also wanted to sort of pinned down.
Yeah. Which one is harder?
Oh my God.
They have their different challenges. I think with the Bartok, one of the challenges is that you, whenever you play a Bartok quartet, I think you're always on your toes. Even if there's a slow movement or it just has this quality to it where you as a player always have to be 100% focused. With the Brahms, I think it's fair to say, and that I don't mean in any diminutive form, but I do think that there are moments where I as a player, or certainly I as a violist perhaps, I like viola jokes, but perhaps I can relax a little bit more and sort of just let myself go in the quartet, I think. So there are different challenges to it.
Yeah. Can you guys talk a little bit about how you connect with audiences? I mean, it's a challenge for any organization in the classical music world. I know that you're teaching, you're on faculty, you're quartet in residence down in Cincinnati at the College of Conservatory Music. So you obviously have students that you're communicating with. But when you do concerts and you reach out to people, I read an interesting interview with you, Jan, where you talk about you don't need to be a nerd or belong to some form of elite to be touched by the art.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that kind of attitude informs how you try to connect with audiences.
I think it really does. I think that when, for us, the most important part of walking on stage is the direct communication with our audiences and the raw pull that a live performance brings, and that we can draw people in with that. I think that really matters to us, and I think, frankly, that's something that gets lost in a lot of studio recordings, in my opinion. And I think that's something that, together with our wonderful producer Judy Sherman, we've really tried to keep alive in this recording, and I think successfully so. I really do think that if you listen to our disc, you hear us the way you would hear us live, and that just brings a whole arch to the musical development that otherwise is difficult to maintain with, you know, all the interruptions of a recording session. But I really do think that this music communicates to whoever you are, and I really do think that that's what we feed off of on stage. We give to the audience, and the audience gives us back. So this energy, this cyclic energy, I think, is the most important thing about a performance in that sense.
I'm always curious to ask, especially string quartets, how do you differentiate yourself from others? How do you, how would you describe your sound, or what are the important qualities that you want to bring to, say, this Brahms quartet or this Bartok quartet? If you had to sum it up into words, what would you say?
It's a difficult question. In a way, I don't really think an artist. I know that we all think in these terms of, well, how is one different than the other, so that one can decide whether to go to listen to one or the other. But really, our job, I always make the parallel between what we do and stage actors. We our job is to take a script and to internalize it and to understand how it works as a narrative, what's the organic progression of events, and how you, as one of the roles in that narrative, what is your part there, and what's your relationship with others, and if you bring that to life, you bring it in your own way. You find your own voice to do that, and if that's successful, it's going to be unique.
Yeah.
There's no way that two actors can do the same thing the same way, and I think it's the same with musicians or any performing artists. And the variety of the different personalities and the different paths that different musicians take all creates this richness. And so we never ask, well, why do you go see a Shakespeare play? You've seen it 100 times by different companies. So why do companies still put it up? Mm-hmm. We don't seem to be asking that question. And nevertheless, we do ask, why are you playing the Brahms again? Or what are you doing differently than somebody else? And
right. So... No, you mean it's all radio question. Interviewers ask that question.
Right. I think also perhaps closing the circle to our beginning exploration is that with this quartet, I certainly can say that having joined them, is that the fact that they have lived through so much being, you can imagine when you're 13, 14 years old, you start playing together, you really get to know each other. So in a different way. And I think that reflects in the way we make music in a sort of direct approach. to it that I think we really look for, and that I think is something that you will hear hopefully in our recording as well.
Yeah, definitely something that makes you unique among other quartets. Mm-hmm. The album is music of Johannes Brahms and Béla Bartók, the string quartet number 2 of Brahms and the quartet number 1 of Béla Bartók. That is the debut album on Avi Records from the Ario Quartet. And if folks want to connect with you on the web or social media, where should they go?
Facebook is always a good place. We have our page there. We also have accounts on Twitter and Instagram that we regularly use and share with.
And of course, the website.
And of course, our website
Ario
is the mecca that holds the answers to all questions, Ario Quartet.
Okay. Ariel spelled A-R-I-E-L.
Indeed.com.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today, and best of luck on this album. I look forward to sharing it with our listeners.
Thank you
so much, and thanks again for having us.